Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Beiser, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Perceptive Podcast. Got a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be discussing one of the first video games being developed for a smart TV, specifically for the Apple TV. So please welcome to the podcast, VP of Creative from ArcTouch, Anthony Hall.
Hi there.
Yep. Hi, Anthony. It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Josh. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I was looking over some of the things that you guys are doing, and it sounds very interesting. And one of the topics that we haven't really talked all that much about on GameWisdom is looking at some of the alternate platforms for game development. I'm mainly a console and PC guy myself. I haven't really delved too much into mobile games, and now we have games coming for the smart TV. So yeah. This is going to be very interesting to get a perspective on part of development that I'm not too aware of, and I'm sure a lot of my audience isn't too knowledgeable on making games for smart TVs. So, to get the ball rolling, Anthony, since this is your first time on the cast, would you mind talking a little bit about your background and what is ArcTouch?
Yeah. Well, my title, VP of Creative, does sound pretty official.
Yeah.
my role here at ArcTouch is to establish the tone and the visual style of all the apps and games that we develop. My background is mostly in creative services. I've worked on the agency side for 19 years, from design studios to advertising agencies. And even before that, I started when I was 19 years old, kid growing up in West San Jose, working 4 years as an intern at Apple Computer while I was getting my first degree. So, you know, I've been around for a bit, but you know, my focus has always been on client services and creating, whether it's mostly digital web and now completely mobile.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to see how game development has really transitioned over like the last, I guess I would say maybe like 15 years. I mean, I get to once again date myself. I remember when cell phones were, you know, these big clunky things. I'm still using like one of like the first or second generation cell phones myself. I'm completely behind on that part of technology. And now we flash forward today and smartphones have really evolved. Not just game development, but in terms of making it more accessible to a wide audience. And we've really seen how that transition has grown with games like Farmville, Angry Birds, etc. Now, you said that you started with your background more on the web development side of things before moving to, I guess, mobile and now smart TV. How has that transition like been as someone in the industry working on these various platforms?
Yeah, you know, I think my whole career starting in the early 90s has been about adopting and maybe a little bit even learning new technology. I mean, the thing that I think about now in creative services, and I'll lump mobile and even TVs into this world now, is you never can stop learning. I mean, every day is an opportunity to gain a nugget of information and grow and increase your toolkit, if you will. Use that metaphor a little bit. But, you know, I've since the beginning, I mean, my very first project at Apple, I was literally 19 years old working in this new department and a big company, and it's Apple. And, you know, I mean, this was, like I said, I think 1992, and you know, they threw a product called Apple Doc Viewer at me, which is very similar to what Acrobat is today. And you know, it's just, they said, learn it, you know, figure out how to make documents out clickable. And I mean, again, that vague description of what I needed to learn was kind of like they just gave me a sandbox and a design and development team and said, make it happen. And, you know, fast forward now many, many years ahead of since then, and I'm kind of still doing the same thing. And that's even to the part of how Echo came about, you know, it was an idea, you know, that sort of thing. So my whole career, whether it's been desktop publishing, turned to clickable things, to web, to now mobile, and we use tap versus click as the context, you know, yeah. It's always been this idea of growing and exploring.
Yep, and that's one of the great things about the game industry is just how rapidly we have evolved over the last, again, I date myself, but over like the last 30 years. I still remember NES 8-bit graphics. And then all this, and then slowly but surely, we saw mobile in the form, at least originally in the form of the Game Boy, being able to deliver decent-looking games. You know, it was still a step below consoles, nothing too fancy, and then that started to evolve. Today, we have handhelds which are almost on par with some of the previous generation consoles. Smartphones are now taking off, and it's just very fascinating to be able to track this kind of development and evolution across these different platforms.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, you mentioned the Game Boy. I certainly had one. I went back as far as the Atari 800 XL, the 2600, Commodore 64, you know, and you start off in this world from a technical kind of figuring things out, and that meant programming. And I think it's, you know, you enjoy what you have at your disposal at that time. And I think kids growing up today look at the graphics and the realism and, you know, and they take it for granted a little bit. And what we saw was nothing realistic, but that shaped our narrative or understanding of the game. And I like to think that a lot of the games and things that are products that are made now are really well done versus some of the things that played when we were kids. Oh, wow, you'd hit on, you know, oh, there's a definite bug. Okay, well, that's just, I'll never go down that route again. And, you know, it became part of the storyline that we actually used when we played the game. So,
yeah. Now, one thing I just want to clarify with you, Anthony, when you started at ArcTouch, did you sort of come on when the company was founded, or did you arrive later in the studio's life?
Yeah, ArcTouch has been around for 7-8 years. Mm-hmm. It was founded by Adam Fingerman and Eric Shapiro, and they were college roommates and our best friends. They went to school at Tufts, and they worked at Apple. And coincidentally, they worked at Apple when I worked at Apple. We were just in departments that were next to each other, but I never knew of them. The company had grown, and then they really kind of incubated as a development-only agency before they blossom into now having a full agency offerings, both strategy, creative development, and then post-launch maintenance and updates and guidance in that regard, strategic guidance, which kind of continues that circle. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, I came on in April. And so still fairly new to the company and, sort of carving out and creating that, creative vision.
Cool. Now, besides Echo being for the smart TV, has ArcTouch worked on any other like video game related projects in the past?
You know, actually, that's a great question. We hadn't. And I think that was one of the reasons. I mean, we had done some small little things that had game-like feelings. And certainly in the products that we've developed for varying either agencies or our clients, there were gamification, there were elements of game-like feelings, controls, these types of things. But, you know, interesting enough, we actually didn't. We're not known for gaming. And when the, you know, I think it really all, we were all listening to Cook talk about when Tim mentioned that he believed that the future of television is apps. And I believe that's exactly his quote. Mm-hmm. You know, we all listened and we were all taking notes. And and to us, it was like, great. I mean, we have an Apple TV. We had the first gens of it, and it was limiting. It was a view only kind of tool. Great, shared my kids' photos and being able to see them from my Mac to my TV for the family. But, you know, we were enticed by that. And so that got us going. Like, what? Wow, we've never done a full-fledged game. Granted, we're all on client deliverables, and so we can't really carve out a lot of time to this, but mm-hmm. we want to see what can be done. So we employed our process and went through the development of Echo.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned a few seconds ago, Anthony, about working on apps and services that dealt with gamification. And that's one of the more interesting topics that we've talked about on Game Wisdom. In the past, I've spoken with a panel of developers. We talked about education and sort of trying to adopt game mechanics and design to help people either understand subjects or to have some kind of like educational bend, like in schools. And one of the topics we did bring up was the use of gamification. And this is one of those buzzwords, I think, that it was a huge deal like 5-6 years ago, and it seems to have really tapered off. From your guys' perspective, ArcTouch, how has sort of the gamification trend like came, and is it still going on, or has it also sort of disappeared on your side of things?
Yeah, it has tapered, and we don't hear about it too much. It's, you know, in the end, we focus really on when we're looking at developing products, apps for clients across any device. We always ladder it back to the benefits of the user. We're very, I would say one of the differentiators of ArcTouch is that we're very, very, focused on the end user and how they're going to be, the joy that they want to have, they need to have, and gamification, features kind of has lost, some of that reason to kind of open the app. There's other ways to get them to be engaged and keep their attention. And, you know, ultimately that focuses on the storytelling, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a very interesting part about mobile development, that we're sort of seeing some pushback or some very interesting debates happen regarding, I don't want to say the word efficacy, but more of mobile's place in game development. Earlier this year, it could have been maybe even late 2014, I spoke with Thorsten Rosser, who gave a speech at the Casual Connect conference, and he just blasted mobile development at the time. I think he considered it akin to gambling. He talked about how much, a lot of like the more darker side of mobile, you know, the focus on getting whales to your games, using monetization and gambling tactics to keep people playing and stuff like that. And I know, at least from my perspective, as more of a hardcore gamer, at least for the PC and console, that I know a lot of people who traditionally look down on mobile development. They don't consider, you know, quote-unquote, as real games. And it's one of those things that it's just very interesting to look at this market, especially at how it's evolved and some of the major players. And I'm sure if we had the time, we could spend a good hour, 2 hour just on the mobile market alone.
Right. And I guess to your point is, you know, sure, there's always going to be the naysayers who believe it's not a real platform for this, or this isn't a correct technology. I mean, if we recall back to when the web was becoming, and, you know, there were a lot of naysayers about how that would evolve. I mean, you know, look, I think I bring it back to one statistics. That's not always a great one. You know, roughly 47% of Americans are using mobile devices to play games. It's the most popular gaming platform right now, and it trumps even console gaming, which is roughly 36% from stats from Mintel. I mean, again, you see a lot of usage, and I believe there are limitations with every technology, and these create the creative and literary challenges that you must kind of, and development challenges that you need to work around to develop a really polished professional product. Mm-hmm. You know, are there things that you can't do within the Apple TV gaming world? Absolutely. You don't have the power in an A8 chip that you do on a true console. But it's an immersive experience. It's personal. And I think it's, you know, so each has its strengths, pros and cons. But the amount of people, I guess this is, you know, anecdotally, this is where I come from. You know, I have an older great aunt, and, she talked to me about Tiny Wings. you know, one of the most popular iOS games for iPhone. And you know, when a woman who's roughly 70 something years old, I honestly don't remember, sorry, Grace, I don't remember your actual age. But I mean, when she's talking to me about a game, that says something. She's never played games in her life. And to me, that's the beauty of mobile gaming mm-hmm. as a platform, is it brings people that never would have been in this industry, looking at these games, thinking of stories being told this way. I just think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. That's one thing that I've really grown to appreciate with talking to a lot of game developers, either through these podcasts or through email interviews over the last few years, is that there's always going to be those naysayers. We've had discussions about people saying, oh, Gone Home isn't a game. Or,
yeah.
Or, it's escaping me right now. Picture games from Artifex Mundi, the missing hidden objects, that's the genre I was thinking about. There's a lot of people who find those things, they don't consider those real games. And again, as you were saying, there's always going to be those naysayers, but when you have these games that offer a good experience that is very accessible, it opens up the market to people who would never play video games. I know Artifex Mundi, they basically specialize to creating games for people who really, to the market, I believe, of women who normally don't have a lot of games that really call their own. Your example, your grandmother's is another good one. I have family friends who are in their like 50s and older who they're never going to pick up any game console. It doesn't matter, you know, if it's $10 on sale. They're never going to pick up a Wii U. I could never see them holding an Xbox controller, but they will play, you know, something like Candy Crush, or they'll have a game that they're playing on Facebook or whatever, and they're enjoying it, and this is something that's allowing them into this market that it wouldn't have been possible otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, mobile gaming challenges the traditional, and I'll say that in quotes, gaming industry status quo. And you know, and instead of true competition would be to deconstruct it and destroy. Those sound very harsh as words, I guess. But you know, I think you get what I'm saying. You could put it down, or you can embrace it, and you can establish complements to within the mobile world. I think of some of the things that EA has done, and I'm a big, you know, sports gamer. I love, the Madden games are religious every year for me and my household. My son and I will play it for days. Same with FIFA. That their experiences in mobile, they're taking that whole you are device agnostic but still playing the same game, and that's a huge component, and that has monetary benefits for the gaming industry. So I would be very careful about saying one is wrong, one is right.
Yeah.
What is right is that people are playing games, period, and ultimately that will benefit the entire industry.
Yeah, and again, that is a great point to touch on, and something we've definitely spoken about so many times on the podcast, and just about how big the consumer market has gotten for the game industry over the last, again, like 10, 15 years. The 2000s was a huge decade for raising awareness and popularity for video games, and a lot of it was making video games more accessible, either from standardizing certain elements of design, controller functionality, and obviously, as we just talked about, the rise of mobile and social game development.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Apple App Stores, they make it possible for developers to build games, that long tail, you know. You don't need publishers like you do with the consoles. And I think that's really interesting. It's a very organic process. Anyways.
Yep, definitely. And another major trend will obviously be the rise of indie developers, who, as you just said, Anthony, they don't need a publisher. They don't need to get into a retail place. They don't need to schmooze with Walmart or Target their game in. They can put their game on a digital platform, the Apple Store, Steam, GOG, etc., and their game will be in front of these people that these games would never have had a chance otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we discussed this a little bit as we were getting the prep, but your previous podcast of Harry Tufts from Pixel Trickery. I mean, he was developing an indie game. He had only been coding a year, but he wasn't a writer. I think that, you know, again, you open up not just his game, whether his game becomes comes to fruition and is amazing. I know he's got a Kickstarter and it's fully funded. Good for him. But I mean, you know, the idea is that here's a writer with a great idea and a terrific story, and how he's able to take that and use gaming as a creative medium. That's an angle that I don't think many people speak of in as when we look at what we are, you know, developers, if you will.
Yeah. And another great podcast, I don't know if you listened to this one yet, that I had with Sam Barlow, who did her story.
Right.
And the amazing work that went into that. Another very creative game, something that wouldn't have been possible, you know, being a big AAA project, but it works as a small team, or I think it may have just been him developing the game. And again, it's that creative force that we see from the indie market and be able to make these games that you don't need millions of dollars of development, you don't need a huge publisher and advertising campaign, you just need to be really passionate and have the know-how or the people around you to help build these great games.
Right, yeah. I think it helps sometimes. You know?
It can help.
This is and one of the things, I mean, as we, you know, focus on ArcTouch and how we build products, apps for any device. I mean, it is truly a team sport, and you know, there's no one person who can do it alone, because there are just so many things that you need to think about when you're developing products, whether you're developing games. You really need a sounding board, some good advisors, and people to work with, you know?
Yep. Definitely great point so far, Anthony. And I think with that said, let's move on and talk a little bit more about Echo itself, and then we'll transition into talking more about creating games and experiences for the Apple TV.
Okay.
So with Echo, to get things started with, for people who haven't heard of it before, what is Echo about?
Yeah, Echo is a free memory game for the Apple TV. It's very similar to other sort of like Simon Says and Bop It, but we added a few twists to it. It would just definitely be considered a general purpose game, very simple, and we like to say the hardest yet simplest game for the Apple TV. It's you know, we talk about being an Echo master and really using the new Siri remote in inventive ways. It kind of has a retro feel, or initially it did. And then as we started defining our concept a little bit more, we got that to it's sort of a different style, if you will. But there are two main components of the game. There's a memory game that utilizes the tap or click, shake and swipe, and in the Siri remote. And it's basically you follow follow repeated actions that you see on the screen. And then there's a speed game, which is, you know, you have to react quickly to what you see on the screen. And again, we use these three main gestures within the Siri remote, the click, swipe, and shake. If you make an error, you lose, and that sort of thing. So very, very simple in concept.
All right. And now, was this an idea that you guys were developing beforehand to adapt to the Apple TV, or was this something that you developed completely 100% for the Apple TV, I guess, as a platform now?
Yeah, it was truly something where like I mentioned earlier, we heard Tim Cook give his bold predictions about the future of television is apps. And whether you believe or disagree, we were hooked. From there, we started thinking about all the games that we could do. You have to go through the normal, hey, how much time do we have to develop this? Any internal project, we want to treat it like a real product, and give it that love and attention that it needs. So it was something that just really came out of like, we've got to build a game. Yeah, that sounds great. How do we, and a group of us has kind of who are gamers here and kind of came together and said, like, how much experience do we have doing this? We don't build a lot of games here. What's the process? And what do we want to build? You know, what's the idea? So that's kind of the genesis, this sort of echo rising from the ashes and, you know, coming out. So,
yeah. Now, while speaking to you guys before this podcast through email, is Echo one of the first, I guess, games or apps for the Apple TV platform?
I believe it is. I don't know whether it was certainly one where we targeted the launch date of the Apple TV in the store, and we really wanted to time it to be first to market. I don't think we were technically. I don't honestly know, but we were close to the first in the store.
All right. And now, as a bit of a stupid question then, is it free to download, or is there any like microtransactions or purchases that go with Echo?
It's free. Download today from the App Store, and there's no in-app purchasing at all. Really, we made this for the development community. I think that's really important. We are handing over the source code. I mean, we want people to build off of this and see how easy it is to build an Apple TV game, and one that's immersive, and has a great concept, and it's really engaging and fun, you know.
Yeah. And in a few minutes, we'll talk more about the unique challenges of developing for the Apple TV. But I just have a few more questions regarding Echo and its development itself for you, Anthony.
Okay.
One question that I was thinking about, in terms of, I guess, the marketplace or the consumers that are interested in it, I guess, how has it been doing in the market? Like, has it gotten a lot of downloads? Have people been downloading a lot for you?
Yeah, we haven't got a lot of downloads. I don't know the specific numbers, to be frank. And actually, it reminds me, I did want to follow up on that. You know, Apple, there isn't – one of the development challenges is the sense that there was no SDK for analytics available at launch. There's one product coming on the market now. For us, we're just – all we know are downloads from Apple and – that'll do just fine for now. But to be honest, I actually don't know the number of downloads. We do have a 5-star rating. I think that's fantastic. That just means like my wife and all our friends are upvoting it, I suppose. It's one possibility. But, you know, it is a very different looking game in that regard. So hopefully people are intrigued by the style and the simplicity of it. It's kind of addictive, frankly. So
now another question I'm curious about, this is normal things that as someone coming at this topic from a PC and console development standpoint, I was just curious, how long did it actually take you guys to develop Echo for the Apple TV?
It was start to finish 3 weeks. Okay. And we had about, I think at any one time we had about 4 people, and that would be half developers, a product manager. We need them. They're the strategist and the glue that holds everything together. And then me and other members of our creative team all kind of working together, as well as our both our founders, Eric and Adam, were deeply involved in the whole process. You know, again, we're all kind of techophiles. Like, this sounds super cool. I want to try this out. I want to get in there and get my hands dirty. You know, ultimately, the heart of what ArcTouch is, we're builders, and we love building. And it doesn't matter what it is. It's what platform, what device. It's so something new is a great opportunity to explore and learn.
Yeah. And speaking about new technologies, I would be remiss not to ask you anything about, have you guys been following, or are you even doing anything with, like, the Oculus Rift and sort of the resurgence of VR of, like, the last 2-3 years?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny you should say that. We have been thinking about that. We have some projects that we've been looking at. And you always weigh this opportunity when you're presenting ideas to a client. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes down to the highest amount of reward, the lowest amount of risk, and to a certain degree. And you know, VR is on the table now, and it wasn't, to your point, it wasn't a year ago, and now it is. And I think of, you know, some great things like the Volvo app, which used VR in a slightly different way. That was fantastic, great integration, get a test drive virtually in that regard. And I think there's a lot of things that can be done with VR. And honestly, I think there's a lot that can be done to continue getting across, getting that message and that voice, and with Apple TV and that channel.
Yeah, and it's definitely interesting to talk about VR. It's probably too big of a discussion to get into tonight, but it's definitely something that we're hearing more and more of. I've spoken to a lot of developers over the last year or so who are really getting excited about, not so much about what's out now, what's coming out in the media future, but what this could mean down the line, like let's say 5-10 years in the future, and to see if VR will have a major impact. And I think one of the big points is not just on game industry, but just in terms of life itself, you know, with augmented reality, stuff we're seeing with the Google Glass, and just a lot of the major companies stepping up to enter this new market, or I should say this revitalized market at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the Rift was a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the it is super fun. But, you know, in the end, one of the things that makes handheld devices, iOS devices, I'm personally both an Android and an iPhone guy, but I love the beauty of just having the device. And when you add an Oculus head-mounted display headset, it takes away the spontaneity. So that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, I think, with integrating VR at home. I could see it working really, really well. And but on the go, and maybe that was never the point, but that's where the adoption is, curve is higher.
Yeah. And again, as we've been talking about with all these new technologies from smart TV, Oculus Rift, mobile, it's definitely the industry itself has just really advanced rapidly over the last 5-6 years. And one of the things I like to say on these podcasts and in a lot of the posts I write is just, I'm really curious to see what the state of the market's going to be by the end of this decade. I think it's just going to be very fascinating to see how all these technologies that we're seeing in its infancy now will mature, hopefully, over the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I've spent my entire life and career here in the Bay Area. And some might say, that's sad. But when you grow up in the Bay Area, you are treated with a delight. And that delight is the fact that you can go to any coffee shop in Silicon Valley or here in San Francisco, where I live in Berkeley, and you can hear people talking about technology. And the level of understanding of technology here is so much greater than anywhere else I've traveled. And that beauty allows you to learn a lot, the osmosis effect, sort of. And I think it's great to see where it's coming, and I'm excited to learn what comes down the pike, whether it's VR or you know, the litany of other ideas and focus. I think it will be great.
Yeah. And it's definitely a great conversation. We build off that quick little tangent. One of the great things about these podcasts, we can get on these fascinating discussions that it could really take us into like the 2-3 hour mark.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. But to wrap things up talking about Echo, I just have a few more, just a few quick questions about it.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm curious about, you mentioned earlier, I'd say maybe 5-10 minutes ago, Anthony, was the fact that you guys gave away the SDK to hopefully get more developers' interest in developing for the Apple TV. Has that bared any fruit yet, or is it still too early to tell?
You know, I don't know where that is, to be honest. I know that was one of our directives from Adam Figerman, our founder, and is that, again, the idea here was less about us. You know, there's no money opportunity for us directly in Echo. It's really about supporting the community and instructing what you can do and push a lot of angles. I mean, you know, I think there's some unique things that we wanted to try out about within Apple TV, specifically using the Siri remote. I think that had, to me, that's a very interesting peripheral in that regard. Is that a good word to say? Controller. And, you know, it's different than other companies who are trying to come into this space doing a very similar method. And, you know, focusing on a very smart remote is very unique. It has, and I think what's, you know, other companies utilize device, a controller that is our standard controller. And I don't want to say they're dumb. They're very smart. They're responsive, and I've come to love them. But Siri remote is completely different, and it does change how when and Apple has a mandate that you use Siri remote as the primary, one of the primary tools. Now you can use secondary, you can have an external like the Nimbus controller. You can also use your device, your handheld, your iPhone. But to mandate that you need, and it's a beautiful mandate that you use the Siri remote, you know, from a developer perspective, the remote then is very similar to your device, your handheld. You can test quickly. You know, we played with Echo a lot with the gyro, but we didn't play with the accelerometer. But the fact that they have both inside a remote is absolutely spectacular. I don't know of any controller that has that kind of sophistication, and that's what makes it very unique. And while the games out there that are also in the store that share space with Echo, you know, there is a lot of really, really intricate games. You know, there's of course the racing games, Asphalt and things like that, but there's, you know, Alto's Adventure is one of my favorite skiing games. It's super fun and beautiful and sophisticated, and it reminds me of Monument Valley a little bit. And again, it's just, I don't think you could do Alto's Adventure on any other platform. It's just made for Apple TV, much the same way that Echo is. It's just the gesturing, the click, swipe, and shake gestures. We program that into the game. So you had to use the Siri remote, and that's a pretty really intricate piece of technology.
Cool. Now, one thing that I forgot to ask at the beginning of the cast, I just want to touch on briefly, is when did the actual Apple TV release? For just for my education, for anyone who missed it.
Yeah, it would happen in about mid-October. I believe. Yeah, that seems right. The date escapes me, and they all sort of run into each other. I believe that's roughly the time frame, 16th or somewhere around there, if I recall correctly.
All right. And I guess my last general question regarding Echo before we move on to our final topic then is, with ArcTouch and the rest of you guys, are you considering or are you even at the moment developing any new apps or games for the Apple TV?
We are, actually. Some of those are, well, we are developing apps for Apple TV for a few of our clients. They are not necessarily true games, like full-featured games like Echo. But the learnings from Echo did allow us to bring in some of the interactivity elements into these. And they're more story and dialogue type of apps. They have true storytelling and narrative. But they're really for a very specific demographic, i.e. kids in that regard. So, yeah, we are, and we see it as a very a channel that would give us a lot of legs for some good for the near future, for sure.
Cool. And again, it's still very much in the beginning period of the Apple TV, so it'll be very interesting to see what's going to be on the platform like in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the App Store, there are the range of creative styles are so broad right now. And that usually is what happens with first adoption. You know, the concept of Echo itself, you know, we kind of took some inspiration from Simon Says and Bop It and those types of games. And that kind of gave us the game understanding, what we really wanted to do. You know, we wanted something to be fun and casual. You know, we really thought of this from the perspective of being social. I might say, and not that I'm an advocate of this, but, you know, especially the memory game is a fantastic drinking game for your buddies, you know, and like, it wasn't that we designed it that way. It just sort of came about, and we created these beautiful immersive experiences, that kind of have a space feel. And we got that from, you know, the simple, well, a couple places. One, we got it from a 1960s NASA space communications project called Echo. And we just, the beauty of the satellite, it was this sort of, metallicized balloon satellite. It was just really beautiful, actually. And then, so we took a lot of the inspiration from that and kind of just used our imagination. But, you know, games by Bungie, Destiny, they gave a lot of inspiration to sort of the depth and even the font and the style that we used within the game. But ultimately, Echo is really about what makes Apple TV games, I think, ultimately very unique from mobile games, other mobile games, if you will, are, you know, mobile games, PC games, console games, you are playing them by yourself. Multiplayer, yes. There might be online, but you're looking at a single screen to the most part. With this game and other Apple TV games, it's meant to be, you know, brought around. Everyone's looking at the TV. By nature, TV is a collaborative social channel. And so this game played into that sort of social. There's the ability to pass the remote to someone and when it's their turn. And it's just so easy to move between players, even though we don't have a true multiplayer feature within the app, in the game. But it's really unique in that regard.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about earlier with being able to get non-gamers and people who would never touch a traditional gaming console or gaming platform to try out games on the smartphone or on a smart TV. The barrier of entry is just a lot lower compared to what you need to get a console or a PC experience.
Right. So much cheaper too. Yeah, that price point. But and, you know, they also have the other elements if to pick and choose. You know, I want to just watch Netflix, for example, or things like that. It's that versatility is great. So,
and just like speaking about Netflix as another tangent, it is just amazing to see what we're seeing, even getting away from the game industry for a second, but with streaming technologies and stuff like that. Again, I date myself. I remember back during the late 80s, 90s, and what we had available for TV, and now we got streaming services. I can watch TV on my game consoles, and you just talk about it, and you can now stream TV directly to smart televisions. It's just very, again, this goes back to probably like our main point for this cast, but just how rapidly technology is evolving for the consumer market.
Yeah, I mean, I not to date myself, but I was, you know, I had a black and white TV in my room, and I would hook up my Atari 800 XL and program on it, and then I'd pull out the cord, and then I would watch some, you know, sitcom. Yeah. I mean, again, technology and has changed so much. It's really amazing, and you know, I really believe now the devices aren't the thing. It's what's, you know, everything's out there, and you don't need a device in that regard. You can really be device agnostic and just move between a TV, a phone, a tablet, a laptop, PC, and all without losing your space, your place. You know, that's really amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, we could spend the next 2-3 hours talking about all these great points. But I think it's time to move on to our final topic. I don't want to keep you all night long. I don't know what time it is where you are, but it's about 8 o'clock here.
Gotcha. It's almost 5 o'clock here in San Francisco.
Ah, cool. Yeah, I know whenever we do these casts with people from different time zones, it's sometimes crazy about the differences. I've spoken to, as you mentioned at the beginning of the cast, Andy, I spoke with Harry over in the UK. I've spoken with Thorsten Ross over in, I think he was in South Africa, Cape Town. I've spoken to people in Croatia, and sometimes it's insane. Like, I'm about to go to bed, and these guys are getting up for the morning, or vice versa. But for our final topic, then, I want to go a little bit more detail about some of the challenges behind developing apps and games for these very different platforms. Early in the cast, you mentioned your background as both developing for, like, I think you said, like, did you do Flash development?
Oh yeah, I was a big Flash guy. And actually, my only previous game that I had developed was for a bar here in San Francisco called Bloodhound, and they had a it had a hunter-gatherer type of feel
Nice.
as the concept of the bar, and we carried that through on the website, and we carried it through in the game that we built. That's a Flash-based game off their website, which I hope is still up. I don't know. Who uses Flash? I know people do. I'm just playing, but yeah.
Yep. And again, as your career went from like the Flash computer to mobile now to smart TV, that's three completely different platforms with completely unique constraints, technological advantages, etc. And again, this is one of those areas that I'm sure a lot of enthusiasts and probably people listening to the cast don't really think about those unique considerations. So, to get the ball rolling then for our final topic, Anthony, I guess the first question, which may not be all that simple, would be, as you've moved from these different platforms, Flash, mobile, smart TV, what were some of like the more interesting takeaways or I guess considerations or challenges you had to work around? Because I know you talked about earlier with how it has been your job to effectively come up with creative and unique solutions to interesting problems.
And I would only add one more there, in that I really got my start in print, going print to web to desktop publishing to web to, now mobile and then TV. And again, I think one of the biggest thing is the speed. Just speed to develop a close to prototype. In the Flash world, and even looking at doing CD and DVD design, a director. Oh boy, I love Lingo. And I mean, the things you could do in one frame of Lingo, the things. I mean, I used to write massive Flash animations that were all just one frame, and I think that was right at the time. Who knows? And but I mean, it speed has definitely become one of those things where it's gotten easier to produce a really good polished product as a proof of concept, so that's that helps a lot in eroding the barriers for my clients, which is really what it comes down to. Can I show them the benefits? And how are they going to, whether it's make money or communicate more efficiently or whatnot? So that's been one.
Yeah, Ben, as a good example, you mentioned earlier with Echoes development, I think you said it took you guys 4 weeks to develop it.
Yeah, it was no more than 4 weeks, roughly around 3 weeks, and from idea to getting it ready to and polished and going through our checklist before we submitted to Apple. And so yeah, it was quick, rapid development, lots of hit a wall, turn 22 and a half degrees and go forward and hit again and move another. And I mean, that's kind of how sometimes early adoption goes.
Yep, and that's something that we really don't see all that often on console and PC development. Even among the indie space, games can take a few months to even a few years in terms of development, making sure you can create an engine for it. And we're seeing on the mobile that the amount of games that are being released daily is just insane. And again, I get to date myself going back to the days where you would get one game, if you were lucky, a month. That was it. And now today, I mean, I can load up Steam and there's probably 2 dozen games that are released as we're talking right now.
Yeah, steam powered. I mean, I was a Counter-Strike maniac. And yeah, I mean, just think of, well, all the client projects and deadlines that I should have made at one time, and I was just playing Counter-Strike. But yeah, it's, you know, you talked about challenges with developing for Apple TV and sort of some of the things that we learned. You know, there's the TV SDK had just been released for a little bit earlier for Xcode. There really wasn't a true analytics engine to be able to capture some data. At the time, we had some issues with different screen resolutions and creating graphics that fit, if you will. And there are slight differences with some, you know, the app submission process going through a TV game, but or any app on Apple TV, but not much. Those are minor. But, you know, there's just some overall things that we learned about the process. Plus, you know, ArcTouch didn't have a lot of traditional game design background. We didn't have a formed process for game development. And one of the things we do know about developing products for a broad range of clients, you know, whether they're the NBCs, the Walmarts, the Yahoos, the Audis, the Guess Jeans, you know, I mean, the range of types of industries that we work in, we have to adopt a process that fits to how those industries, those clients, and maybe even their agency or records operate. In game design, we didn't have a blueprint, you know, so we're kind of, we asked a lot of people, we got some great advice, and I think we spent literally the first 3 days defining, okay, what's the most optimal way to work here, you know, and we want the narrative to really be important, but keeping in mind, this is a very simple game. It's really supposed to be an addictive, fun way to spend, you know, a few minutes while you're at your TV, and hopefully it's something where you can get the whole family together, some friends at a party, and just kind of do what TVs do really well, which is you've got a captive audience, bring people together, and have them you know, be social in that regard, I guess.
Yeah, and it's just very interesting to see just like a lot of the hurdles that you get around. Again, we can talk about control design standardization. I want to talk a little bit more about the Siri remote specifically in a few minutes too. And another thing that I was thinking about, again, going through your background from print to flash to mobile to smart TV, earlier in the cast when we were talking more about mobile development, you talked about the mechanics of swiping and tapping. And that's one of those things, again, as someone who doesn't follow mobile game design all that much, that is one of those topics that somewhat eludes me.
Yeah.
And I guess my question for you, Anthony, is as you're thinking about these designs and these considerations, and especially going back when you're working with mobile development, how does swiping and tapping as, I guess, verbs for the player or someone to interact with, how does that change your thinking in terms of developing an app or a game compared to a traditional either a gamepad or keyboard and mouse interface?
Yeah, I mean, it does change it. I mean, it's another means of interacting. And in this case, we really wanted to that glass touch surface on the Siri remote is really nice. It's fun to touch. But you could definitely do more with it. And so we sorry about that. We wanted to really kind of, when we're doing any product development, and specifically with the Echo game, we focused on first, you know, what's the underlying story here? But then second, how do we want people to interact? And there's certainly just, well, you could tap it, but knowing that you have an accelerometer and you have a gyroscope inside the app, I mean, inside the remote, excuse me, these are really interesting things to play on. And so we started focusing on the range of gestures that you can and inputs and seeing how we might be able to map gameplay to those. So, I mean, and it's not that much different than a traditional controller-based game. You just have many different buttons. So you might do things like the shake as one of our primary gestures, one of the three. And, you know, that's fun to do. And that's something that you could do on iOS. And we just brought that into the game mechanics here.
Mm-hmm. And that leads me into my question regarding more about the Siri remote itself. Again, as someone who doesn't, obviously I don't have a smart TV at the moment to talk about, but could you go into a little bit more detail about what makes a Siri remote unique or different compared to other peripherals or other gamepads? I know a few minutes ago you mentioned it has an accelerometer, it has the motion control, stuff like that, but could you go into a little bit more about, I guess, what makes it different?
Yeah, I actually think it's one of the most unique controllers for any game. It is a very simple tool, and there's only a few buttons on it, not including the trackpad. I think there's six. So it's really, there isn't a lot of inputs to create confusion. But it is a very capable game controller. And I might say that's actually pretty awesome. You know, when you're playing Asphalt, you turn it sideways and, you know, it's like a steering wheel. The versatility of it is unique. It's got motion control. It's got a touch surface. It's got some buttons. It kind of is. But then the biggest thing is that it's got voice. I mean, it's got Siri built in. That's pretty interesting. So, you know, we've talked about with an Echo 2, if it comes out, you know, focusing on voice controls. I think there's a lot of people who could benefit from that. And just it's, again, another tool for game developers to use. And also thinking about people who have accessibility issues. I mean, this is a device that any age, you can hold it. Yeah. You can interact with it. And the voice makes it that much more of a universal tool for a broader age.
Mm-hmm. And accessibility is a really good point, and takes us, again, back to mobile development, especially with smartphone designs, and removing a lot of hard buttons in favor of touch interfaces. And I'm looking at the remote right now, I brought up a picture of it, and yet, it's amazing, again, to see how sleek and compact technology is getting. Talking more about controller design, at least from a general game design point of view, I remember the 90s when every developer or every console was having its own unique gamepad and, you know, overflowing with buttons. And I remember the classic GameCube, or I'm sorry, the Nintendo 64 C-Stick and stuff like that. And as console development has standardized, we're seeing with like smart technology, smartphones, and the Siri remote, that it's going for a very streamlined point of view. I mean, you look at it, really only has, we could say, I guess, five buttons if we count the combination of the minus and plus, and right, then it has the additional features like the glass touch interface, Siri, the microphone, stuff like that. And a lot of that stuff, again, goes towards making it have the options to create a variety of games without having to overload someone with a lot of buttons and a lot of hard pieces of technology to have to deal with.
Yeah, and it's wireless. I mean, I know that that's obvious, right? But, I mean, you think of some of like the NES controllers from back in the day. And, I mean, those things probably had roughly the same amount of buttons. But it's a lot less sophisticated piece of hardware. Mm-hmm. Siri remote is no joke. And when I mentioned earlier about how I think that's what makes Apple TV's platform very unique, is from a gaming perspective, you know, it's unlike other platforms would say you can use a lot of different controllers and, you have to use the Siri remote. Your app has mm-hmm. to, your game has to work standalone with the Siri remote. That's not a limitation in my regard, that in my opinion, that is something where you You're utilizing a phone-like hardware and functionalities, i.e. the gyro and accelerometer and the touch, Siri, in such a unique way. It opens up a lot of different ways to communicate and play.
Yeah. And you mentioned, of course, a Nintendo remote or a Nintendo controller. And again, it's just fascinating to see these differences between the evolution of technology. And I think another good point you mentioned, Anthony, was the fact that the remote, the Siri remote, is standardized to the Apple TV and towards games and apps developed for it. That means that everyone has to approach it from the same way, so you don't have to worry again about making something that wouldn't be accessible or would require a third-party remote or third-party peripheral.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. And I mean, again, Apple does that a lot. It's just their approach to things is radically different than the than other companies, and that works. And but it does create a baseline standards where everyone can enjoy. And it's been fruitful. I mean, Apple TV is App Store is growing, and is it for everyone? Probably not. But if you're looking for it to take away your console, have no fear, it will not. But it's a great, it's another platform. And if you're a gamer, you love all game platforms, and you can't just say one versus the other.
Yeah. And now, one question I want to ask you, Anthony, that this comes again from not, I guess, from my lack in terms of a hardware or a technical background. And one thing that I'm curious about, again, as someone who has developed for these different platforms, how does the Apple TV, I guess, in terms of technical specs compare to, like, smartphones and even, like, PCs? Now, of course, you mentioned earlier that in terms of, like, a true 100% dedicated PC gaming machine, that probably still stands head and shoulders above the rest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think Apple TV is in its, I guess, the second biggest release. It's got some subsequent smaller releases in the first version. But, you know, this is the one they put a powerful A8 chip inside. It's got 64-bit architecture. It's got, I mean, we can all read the specs in that regard. It's got memory and lots of it. It's like your, and I think the idea, and I have no way of basing this off of, but I think Apple tried to create a commonality so that there's that very seamless experience in transitioning as a developer from building apps for macOS to iOS to tvOS. That's a seamless experience and consistency. So I think our dev team has done a great job adopting, and they're wizards of this sort of the tiny screens, if you will.
Now, another thing I would really kick myself for not asking about, Anthony, as we've talked about with, I guess, lowering the bar or lowering the accessibility requirements for playing video games, one of the bigger trends or one of the things that we started to hear a lot about was Valve and Steam trying to enter the TV or the console market with the Steam Box and trying to, again, bring like the power of the PC to the living room. And I was just wondering, again, with your background in terms of developing on these different platforms and technologies, what are your thoughts or opinions on Steam's foray into this? Because I've heard mixed opinions from various people about it.
I don't actually have a lot of experience with Steam machines. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of that area to base that on, unfortunately.
All right, not a problem. Yep, and it's been a great talk so far, Anthony. Talking about like the standardization or making games more accessible is a very intriguing topic. Again, as two guys who have grown up with this industry and see all the evolutions, that have happened. It's just amazing to see how far we've come. I talked about earlier in the cast about the big, I guess, standardization that took place over the last decade with consoles and gamepad technology. And I guess to start to wrap things up, this is one of those questions I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this or not, but I just want to ask it of you, Anthony. In terms of what we're seeing with like the mobile and smart TV, especially with the interfaces and design around them, do you think we've hit a point of, I guess, a standardization point? Like, do you think there's any more room to evolve or streamline or change mobile and, I guess, even smart TV technology? Or do you think that we've come close to hitting that limit already?
You know, I'm certainly not qualified to answer that, but I will tell you this. I'm always impressed with human ingenuity. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I'm just impressed every day. And one of the things I do a lot of is I have a lot of friends. I talk to a lot of people. I ask the questions, maybe candidly, what are you doing? And give me a little sneak peek. And I hold secrets really well. And, I'm always amazed by what people are coming up with and the problems they're solving. And, ultimately my whole career has been about, solving problems in one way, shape, or form. And I really, I honestly feel lucky to be in and allowed to stay in this industry as long as I have. And because I see so many people that are out there that are learning and growing and just solving really big problems. And so have we hit a standardization point? No. I think there's always an inflection point in any maturity of any technology. We saw it with the web. We saw it with desktop publishing. We saw it with broadcast. And you'll see it again with other mediums and the ones, maybe the VRs, as you mentioned down the road earlier. But I think that kind of plateaus for a bit, and then boom, there's another technological innovation that drives it all again. And that's the beauty. We're all looking for that. Call it a unicorn, call it something else. We're all looking for that cool idea that we can all go, yeah, that's it. And let's I got something to build on that as well. And let's do this. And I think that's just the beauty of being a kid at heart and ultimately being a developer, designer, creative person in this day and age.
Awesome. I think that's a great point to start to wrap things up on, Anthony. Again, there's so many great topics. I bet it would be great to talk to you about for like the next 2-3 hours. But in terms of this topic, I think I am just about out of questions. So before we begin to wrap things up, are there any other topics or points or anything you would like to bring up before we start to say goodbye?
No, I think this was great. I appreciate the time.
All right, no problem. I think with that, then, my final question for you, Anthony, is do you have any final thoughts or anything we talked about or anything you would like to say to fans or anyone listening to the cast right now?
I work with a great group of people here at ArcTouch. As I mentioned earlier, it's a team sport. And if you want to learn more about what we do at ArcTouch or our Echo game, visit arctouch.com/echo. And thank you so much.
Cool. All right. I think with that, we're going to end things here for this edition of the Perceptive Podcast. Again, Anthony, it was a pleasure talking with you tonight. Hopefully, we can have you back on again soon because it was definitely great talking with you. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting tangents and topics we could really spend some time on.
Likewise, Josh. I appreciate the time, and it was great talking to you.
Awesome. And I definitely wish you and the rest of the guys at ArcTouch good luck with developing more for the Apple TV and whatever the future may come for either mobile, VR, or more smart TV technology.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Cool. So for those of you listening, we're going to end things here. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. As always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. First, if you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. I am currently looking for guests, either enthusiasts, students, or developers who would like to come on and talk, so feel free to shoot me an email there. If you'd like to contribute to our ongoing Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom, and any donations would be greatly appreciated. And if you like to watch videos or me streaming a variety of games, you can check out the Game Wisdom YouTube channel and the Game Wisdom Twitch stream. The Twitch stream is under GW Bicer, and I do most of my streaming around 10 Eastern most nights, and there are links to both of them on the front page. So, with all that said, thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.